from deep inside your radio. Ladies and gentlemen, once again in London, England, I am. And I pointed out on a show last year when I was also over here this time of year that I finally realized the purpose of Christmas decorations, which, of course, were originated in Northern Europe, not in the Mediterranean, where the whole, you know, Megillah went down. The purpose being to cheer people up as this absolutely depressing part of the year descends. The part where, you know, the sun sets at 3:15 and like that, and the sky is gray all day. And I was reminded of that insight this year again, when same deal, except I now know, especially after last night, that it also probably accounts for the tradition newly enlivened, at least in London, by the fact that they got a show off for, because it's an Olympic year, by the profusion of fireworks on New Year's Eve. So you brighten up the night in the streets in the weeks leading up to Christmas, first real blast of winter, and then you brighten up the night for New Year's Eve, and then you forget about it for 4 months and just go, oh, no. They need to figure out some lights to put up for St. Patrick's Day or something just to punctuate. You know, otherwise, it's just dire. Now, I've been monitoring the news coverage, of course, from back home, and they really are doing a fine job of keeping us absolutely up to date over the last 6 months with something that it doesn't happen until Tuesday. Man, you will not hear the words Iowa caucus is spoken again on this broadcast, but they've sent everybody there this time because nothing's going to happen and you're going to know all about it. Meanwhile, how much have you heard about the contents of a little thing signed with exquisite timing on the Friday between Christmas and New Year's by the President of the United States, for the first time memorializing in law the President's power to indefinitely imprison, detain an American citizen for like forever? But, you know, everybody's like telling you everything you need to know about whether a Rick Santorum surge is real or not. Anyway, this is part two of our look back at the year, now safely about to be picked up by the trash people and hauled away to be recycled into another year, maybe another 11. And we're looking back in rancor at some of the major events of the year. Way back in February, you may have forgotten about this. Colin Powell actually spoke up, asking the CIA and the Pentagon why they hadn't warned him that the single source for the so-called intelligence about mobile bioweapons vans that he tooted his horn about at the UN, the single source, known as Curveball, was known to be a fabricator, not a fabricator of mobile weapons vans, a fabricator of stories about mobile weapons vans. This happened because Curveball came out, gave some interviews at the beginning of this year. He was an Iraqi who hated Saddam Hussein, got out of the country, and went to Germany, where the German intelligence service put him on the payroll. The BND, German intelligence, knew in 2000 that I was lying, says Curveball, after they talked to my former boss, who told them there were no mobile bioweapons factories. For 18 months after that, they left me alone because they knew I was telling lies. Then all of a sudden, in the run-up to the 2003 invasion, they came back to me and started asking for more details. I still don't know why German intelligence then passed on my information to the CIA. I want there to be an inquiry so people will know the truth, says Curveball. You may have noticed, at least during the rest of 2011, no inquiry. Curveball was paid $3,000 a month for 5 years by German intelligence after they knew he lied. What a wonderful way to start off
the year in rebuke. old Iraqi, Saddam you couldn't stand. So you became a migrant in a foreign land. Ended up in Germany, got to know some spies. Got yourself a code name, much to your surprise. Hey, curveball, throwing loose and wild. Hey, curveball, got them all beguiled. Had them believing and begging for more. All I did was try to start an 8-year war. You did engineering back in your Baghdad days. So you were always turning a kind of techie phrase. Tunisia, Egypt, don't forget Libya too. All of them could have used a guy like you. Hey, curveball, admiring your pitch. Hey, curveball, like throwing a switch. It was all true, so you swore. All I did was help to start an 8-year war. You came up with info you knew would please. Fans for bioweapons, making WMDs. They didn't probe and they didn't press. Your friends and you were on the Invasion Express. Hey, curveball, you got some nice dough for telling us what you don't know. You were the winner if you're keeping score. All I did was try to start an 8-year war. You could have stayed and fought for what you believed. It would have been risky, pain you might have received. Your lies killed the tyrant, that's all she wrote. Too bad the dead and injured didn't get a vote. Hey, curveball, you were born to lead. Too bad your country doesn't feel the need. You steered clear of the blood and gore. I just made a bundle off an 8-year war.
From London, England. From Leicester Square. Remember him. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of Le Show. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news from outside the bubble. It's bubblicious. The Pakistani government has admitted to the country's highest court of law that it has no control over its own military. Isn't that nutty? It's from Dawn. This is from Dawn, the English-language Pakistani newspaper. The Ministry of Defense conceded before the Supreme Court it has no operational control over the armed forces as well as inter-services intelligence, the ISI. More about them later. The government has heightened apprehensions, with many interpreting it as an ultimate sign of friction between the civilian arm of the government and the military. So, if you want to deal with the military, don't call the Pakistani government. Call, I don't know. And from the Telegraph in London, a woman claims she can see the face of Jesus in the creases of a drying sock. 38-year-old Sarah Crane said she was stunned when she saw a bearded man staring back at her from the laundry line. Her boyfriend agreed the crumpled gray holy sock bore an uncanny likeness to the traditional image of Christ. And the couple took photographs to show their friends. They even talked about creating a shrine to the sock, but then the face was lost when they moved the sock. Crane from Orpington, Kent, said, quote, I'd left the washing out to dry overnight, and it had probably been sitting there a bit too long when I noticed the face in the sock. I called my boyfriend over straight away. We could both clearly see the face of Jesus in the sock. A straight-on face and a side profile, too. We couldn't believe it. I immediately took some pictures to show our family and friends. We think it's a bit of a sign, but for what we don't know. We thought it would be good to make a little shrine for it, but unfortunately when we moved it, the creases fell out a bit, and the face isn't quite as clear now. But you can still just about make out his face, she says. Unfortunately, it's not quite good enough to donate to our local church. But our friends have all been around to see it, unquote. The sock is the latest, of course, in a series of everyday objects on which people have claimed to see Jesus. Miss Crane says in the future, she'll choose a deity that can withstand rough treatment in the dryer. No, she didn't say that. But news from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. The year began with unrest in our quantum ally, Egypt, a country that we had relied upon for many things over the years, including some, it was recipient of some of the detainees we had extraordinarily rendered for, you know, nice interrogation. And so when people took to the streets in Egypt, in Cairo, particularly in Tahrir Square, there were some questions about how the United States would react. It was, in fact, an episode of Clinton something, as we look back on the year in rebuke.
Clinton something, the State Department years.
This is bad, hon. This is really bad.
It's being a little premature.
What do you mean?
Well, the cable traffic I'm reading says Mubarak has a good chance of hanging on to power.
Hon, I'm talking about the food here in Davos.
The food's bad?
What food are the Swiss famous for?
Well,
the cheese with the holes.
Mm-hmm.
And the holes are the best part.
Well, anyway, it doesn't look as bad as it looked 2 hours ago when I was talking to the White House.
Mm-hmm. They were saying the glass half overturned by violence.
Oh, you know how they are. They never want to be accused of being out of touch like...
like Bush during Katrina.
That's right. Mm-hmm. So they're watching Al Jazeera and they're freaking out.
Oh, I don't blame them. They got this chick anchor in Doha. So you're telling the White House to cool it?
Among other people who apparently need to.
Oh, no, look, I'm just an appreciator of talent at this point in time.
That doesn't mean you can't tell me about her.
Maybe later.
Yeah.
Anyway, Toots, I wish I could feel as sanguine about the situation in Egypt. You know, my global initiative has a $2 million thing with Mubarak. If he goes to London, I got to think that... that $2 million is his traveling companion. Then I got a board that wants to know how I signed off on that deal without some kind of clawback provision in the event of a revolution named after a flower or color. And
well, we've got a 4 o'clock meeting scheduled.
All hands?
All big hands. Mm-hmm. Me, the president, the vice president, me.
Mm-hmm.
The chief wants to decide whether he wants to say something.
About anything?
About Mubarak.
Yeah, yeah, he should. About 12 hours ago, he should.
Bill, you know this guy. He's about as impulsive as a two-ton boulder. A very thoughtful two-ton boulder, but still.
Well, listen to it. I know the concerns of an ex-president running a billion-dollar humanitarian enterprise don't amount to a hill of beans in this cockeyed world.
But?
No, that was it.
Well, I just think in this whole situation, somebody's got to speak up for democratic principles and human rights.
Mm-hmm. And so?
No, that was it.
All right, look, guys. Mm-hmm. I'm just as happy not to say anything. You know, let President Mubarak deal with it as he will. We pick up the pieces afterward. But Axelrod and a couple other folks here think my silence is louder than any statement I could make aside from death to Mubarak.
Mr. President,
yeah,
let
Joe.
Me... let me take the first swing at this, if I might. All due respect to Dave Axelrod, as I understand it, this is his last day in the White House. The rest of us have continuing responsibilities. Now, Mubarak's a good guy. When he lacks in transparency and adherence to the rule of law, he more than makes up for in regional stability, and you can't buy that.
Well, Pakistan sure proves that point.
Yeah.
Could I get a swing at this now?
I'm not just yet. I'm in mid-swing. So I think, sir, that whatever we say.
Whatever I say.
Right, of course. Should be very carefully calibrated to not make it look like you're throwing this good man under the bus because, among many other things, I understand his folks keep very good records of the extraordinary rendition people this country has sent to him.
Mm. Could be embarrassing. But that would involve looking backward. We're trying to win the future. Hillary, your shot.
It's baseball, now it's basketball. I'm just going to talk. Mr. President, the Egyptian street is out in front of us now. Yes, there are good and sufficient reasons for us to have been partners with President Mubarak in the past. But that's looking backward, too.
Mm.
We've already got people on Al Jazeera showing tear gas canisters made in USA.
Crap, I missed that.
If we don't get ahead of this curve, the answer to why do they hate us is going to be, with all due respect, sir... You.
So, we do throw Mubarak under the bus?
Sir, I just think in this whole situation, somebody's got to speak up for democratic principles and human rights.
Mm-hmm. And?
No, you know, that's it.
Okay. Well, we're under the gun here. Mubarak's delaying his TV speech until he knows what we're going to say.
What you're going to say.
Right. So, I think I do both the right and the smart thing.
Which is?
I say I'm on the side of the Egyptian people and the Egyptian government.
Yeah, we're the facilitators of reform.
Yes, we can talk to both sides.
We can make it happen. You know what? You know what this is?
Hmm?
This is us winning the future. Okay. We good?
We're good. We're damn good.
Youthful angst and middle-aged power. Together they add up to Clinton something. The State Department years.
Down in the city, it's a pity what's there. Oh, the kids in the gutter running really bare. How much of money do I have to get? They're getting me set where the jet set gets. Like up on the hill where they do the boogie. The boogie. I wonder what they're doing when they do the boogie. And I wonder what I'm doing here. Down in the city, if you ain't dead, you better watch that man. He's gonna bust your head, throw you over and leave you alone. He's a 20 minutes late, he gotta be back home. Way up on the hill where they do the boogie. Boogie. I wonder what they're doing when they do the boogie. And I wonder what I'm doing here. The rat's in the alley and a roach on the floor. A businessman a hunting for a two-bit whore. I thought I heard some housewives say I gotta go up the hill for the PTA. Meets up on the hill where they do the boogie. Boogie. I wonder what they're doing when they do the boogie. And I wonder what I'm doing here. Some folks say that a hippie won't steal, but I caught three in my cornfield. One had a flag and the other had a bomb, and the third old boy was getting on home. Way up on the hill where they do the boogie. The boogie. I wonder what they're doing when they do the boogie, and I wonder what I'm doing here. Now all I know about is what I read. I see you coming at me on a TV screen. Every time the boogie, well, it gives me a thrill. But they always seem to do it way up on the hill. Way up on the hill where they do the boogie. The boogie. I wonder what they're doing when they do the boogie. And I wonder what I'm doing here.
This is Le Show, looking back And looking ahead, Janus-like. So appropriate for the month, don't you think? And now,
ladies and gentlemen, we are proud to present Let Us Try, a ballad of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers.
Let us try to stem the tide, to beautify our countryside. We offer you our hand. Let us try. We can help to make things grow, help to make the waters flow, to save our precious land. Let us try.
Well, here they are trying again. The Army Corps of Engineers agreed this week not to clean up all their waters. They agreed to arrange a third-party review of levees along the west bank of the Mississippi River in New Orleans after an inspection found logs, a hot water tank, a shopping cart, and other debris in a levee, which is supposed to, you know, have like dirt, nice clay type dirt. Senator David Vitter, Republican of Louisiana, said he secured the commitment from two key officials of the Corps in New Orleans to have a third party review. It'll be made part of the agency's of the Corps' peer review program to ensure the planning, design, and construction of the levees were done appropriately and where there are problems that remedies are developed. So for a levee that's got, you know, crap in it that doesn't belong there, there's now going to be at least a somewhat independent review. It'll be assembled by the Corps, but it's a third party. It's not the Corps looking at its own work. And by the way, on a similar subject, an independent review of the Corps of Engineers' management of the Missouri River during historic flooding this year has found that the manual the agency uses to decide how much water to store in reservoirs in the Dakotas and Montana does allow the agency to adjust for epic flooding, but the manual is not great at predicting when that flooding will occur, like a manual could predict, you see. The review panel notes the Corps has an ongoing challenge of managing the river, because we made it do that. The Corps, it says, needs to be given the flexibility to manage to changing water conditions. The Corps is a large entity, and an independent review was the only way to go, said who is this guy? Looking back in this report, somebody said that. The Corps is a large entity, and independent review was the only way to go. It had to be done by folks not embedded in the system. Oh, this is, I believe... Well, I'm not going to guess. Anyway, somebody said that. So they've reviewed the Corps of Engineers' work, which led to a tardy and overabundant release of water too late in the spring season, leading to the flooding of the Missouri River throughout the Dakotas, Nebraska, and so forth. Still, that review happened and was completed within the year that the flooding happened. We are now, 6 years along from the flooding of New Orleans. A whole city flooded through the apparent negligence and malfeasance of the Corps. Still no independent investigation of that. Even now. Isn't that wacky? Isn't that wild? We could try. You know, let us try. Or not. Ladies and gentlemen, this was the year that the Los Angeles Dodgers kind of fell into bankruptcy. Let's look back, shan't we?
The year in rebuke.
A reminder, this week the Pittsburgh Pirates pay their first visit of the year to once beautiful Dodger Stadium. And this Tuesday night is bankruptcy night at the ballpark. That's right, the first 10,000 fans through the turnstiles will get a free piece of concession stand hardware and a discount ticket to bid on the rest. Imagine you could be serving your very own Dodger dogs in the friendly confines of your very own California Pizza Kitchen. And every ticket you buy entitles you to a seat. Not just to sit in it, but to actually take it home. With every adult beverage you buy on this most special evening, you'll get authentic Dodger Stadium World Series bunting. Seldom used, no longer needed. And come the seventh inning, everyone gets to bid on the bases. You can touch them all. By the bottom of the ninth, we'll have cleared out everything, except the friendliest fans in baseball. If you ever wanted to take home a piece of Dodger Stadium history, bankruptcy night is just what the trustee ordered. This special promotion is sponsored by Major League Baseball itself, so you know it can only happen once in any three-year period. So make your plans, bring the flatbed truck, and take home baseball history in a plain paper bag. Just make sure you bring your own bag. Bankruptcy night, Tuesday evening at Dodger Stadium. It's the one sale that's truly going yard.
And on matters of athletic interest.
California.
Oh, somebody's talking, and it's not me. As I say, on matters of athletic interest, ladies and gentlemen. It's wild in here. It's a whole new year. And this is news of the Olympic movement. Produced by Jim Ebersole Jr. This is an Olympic year. Think of it. Dow Chemical has agreed to remove its branding from the $10 million wrap around the Olympic Stadium in East London after protests in India. The move has been welcomed by the Indian Olympic Association, which had threatened to pull out of the 2012 Games. Campaigners in India say Dow, which took over the firm behind the Bhopal disaster, has not gone far enough. And protesters in Vietnam are ticked off because Dow made and still makes Agent Orange. They say Dow should never have been allowed to sponsor the wrap. It will damage the London Olympics' green image. And the British government has rejected calls for the 2012 Games to be an austerity Olympics. You see, times not that well right now, not that good, not going that well. Amid concerns over the $15 billion cost of the event during the economic downturn, the Culture Secretary, Jeremy Hunt, yes, I was careful in placing the right consonant in the right place, said voters would not forgive the government if it failed to make the most of the games, which could provide a boost to the economy. Rather than cutting its budget, the Olympics opportunity should be harnessed to showcase Britain's culture, history, and creativity, he said. Hosting the games during the global economic crisis was an incredible stroke of luck, he said. I think he was implying it was good luck. That's not in the quote. You can take two attitudes to the Olympics. You can say these are times of austerity and therefore we should pare them down as much as possible. Or you can say because these are times of austerity, we need to do everything we possibly can to harness the opportunity of the Olympics. We're going to be the center of global attention. And it will be the first time that we've had a major sporting event that's watched live by half the world's population. People would not forgive us if we didn't make the absolute most of this moment. Ministers have faced demands for spending on the Olympics to be reduced in recognition of efforts by the government to tackle the deficit. Oh, yeah, that thing. Earlier this week, the Conservative mayor of London, Boris Johnson, praised the 1948 austerity post-war Olympics in London, where athletes traveled by bus and other countries donated items. But the culture secretary stopped short of saying the games could prevent the UK from entering a double-dip recession, but added, quote, will the Olympics have a massive positive impact on our economic confidence? I think the answer is resoundingly yes. He said massively positive. All right, then. We'll be watching. the Olympics. It's a movement, and we all need one. Every day. This is the Year in Rebuke, and this was the year that Katie Couric gave up her job as anchor of the CBS Evening News. She might have even encountered her predecessor in the job.
Yes, Mr. Rather. What's your pleasure this evening?
I'll have the usual. Thanks, Richard.
That's the early bird special?
The usual.
Yes, sir.
Hello, Dan.
Sister Couric. What brings you to these precincts?
Oh, just a celebration-type drink with one of my new colleagues.
Well, you have to scoot on over, or can you set a spot?
Well...
That's the early bird special, Mr. Rather?
Yes, Richard, the usual. Thank you.
A beverage, sir.
Water's fine.
Yes, sir.
Well, now that that's over, I guess I can sit down for a minute or two.
Great.
I can see him coming in from here. So, how are you?
Finer than Hill Country Cotton, Miss Katie. And you?
So excited about my next chapter.
Oh, really? What are you reading?
In My Life.
John Lennon bio?
I'm very excited about the next chapter in my life after You Know Where.
Oh, I know where, all right. So, unless my sources are mad cow wrong, you're headed on over someplace with initials as simple as ABC.
Well, if your sources are all the wires and half the internet, I guess they're right. What would that be, sane cow right?
Oh, you're going to do well over there, Sister Couric. Interesting, isn't it?
Excuse me, sir. Here you are. The early bird water.
Thanks so very much.
What's interesting, Dan?
Well, they chased me out of CBS News for being too hard and you for being too soft. I guess Brother Pelly is going to be just right.
Oh, I don't think I was too soft.
Really?
I...
What are you doing over at ABC? Documentaries?
Afternoon talk show.
Well, all right, then. Let's just put it this way. You were daytime hard, not evening hard.
Look, Dan, I think we can agree it was a rough place to work. For me, I think it was because I was a woman. I still am, last time I looked. And for you...
Oh, I'll take over this part. I think it was because I was a two-fisted hombre in a building full of one-fisted hombres.
Can I ask you something? Do you miss doing the news every night?
Tell you something, Sister Couric, I miss it like a rodeo bull misses his bucking shoot.
I'm sorry, is that a yes or a no?
Here you go, sir. The early bird salad.
I'm getting to work with such a tight-knit little team, knit tighter than an Andean poncho. We're doing award-caliber work, even though the channel isn't award-eligible. I'm busting more shoe leather than I did in two decades over at West 57th Street. And
you're on what, channel 4002?
HDNet is up at what we call the hard end of the channel selector. I think Brother Cuban likes it that way.
That's great. Can I ask you something?
Sure.
Did they ever put gibberish in the prompter when you were there?
Sister Couric, any given night, half of what was in the prompter was gibberish.
No, I mean, like, nonsense syllables just to... Hey, are you eating your salad without dressing?
Dressing's for the dude ranch wranglers over at the networks. I like my salad the way I like my women, undressed and without E. coli. No offense.
You know, I'm so used to it by now, it hurts. Oh, there's my new friend. Great to see you, Dan. You look great.
Oh, thank you, Sister Couric. You drop dead gorgeous and stay dead charming.
Thanks. Watch for me over in the soft side of the channel selector. Take care.
Here's the early bird chicken, Mr. Rather.
Richard, as always, sir. Many thanks.
And now, news of our friend the Atom.
Clean, safe, too cheap to meet. Save, cheap, too cheap to meet. Clean, save, too cheap to meet. Save, save, too cheap to meet.
Japan's response to the nuclear crisis. Oh, Addie, are you with us?
Yeah, I'm over here. It's so dark, you couldn't see me.
You're so small, I couldn't see you anyway. Japan's response to the nuclear crisis that followed the March 11th tsunami was confused and riddled with problems, and workers were untrained to handle emergencies. That's according to an interim report. From the first official probe into the twin disaster, an independent panel. And there's another independent panel within the year. How about that? Set up to investigate the event, but that's Japan. The events around the world's worst nuclear accident in a generation said Tokyo Electric Power, TEPCO, the utility that ran Fuk, and the Nuclear and Industrial Safety Agency had failed to think beyond the risks for which the nuclear plant was designed. You mean like a plan B? The plant was hit by, well, a tsunami, you know that. The panel's interim report sharply contrasted with TEPCO's own probe. Yeah, they investigated themselves, which said the utility could have had no way to prepare for the 9.0 magnitude earthquake and giant waves that followed. This new 500-page document based on interviews with more than 400 people involved in the accident, why, that's almost a person per page, comes 9 months after the crisis. The panel said its aim was not to apportion blame, but to learn why the accident happened the way it did. The report also noted that TEPCO did not have enough expertise on the ground after the disaster, saying it made mistakes like misunderstanding the functioning status of the number one reactor's cooling system and mishandling the number three reactor's cooling system. Aside from that, Mrs. Lincoln, the cooling systems were... The 12-member panel was set up in May on the initiative of then-Prime Minister Khan. It'll release a final report next year. It includes seismologists, former diplomats, and judges. But they're not going to find any blame. Why would you include judges on a panel investigating a disaster if you're not going to find... Last week, thousands of skiers took to the snow-covered slopes of Fuk Prefecture for the official seasonal start of the ski season in resorts across the mountainous region following heavy snowfall. However, there were clues this was no ordinary ski season, according to the Telegraph. In particular, the daily postings of radiation readings in the region, alongside the more standard snow reports, as well as the regional authorities monitoring food safety levels. And that's just one sign of the new normal in Japan. Here's another. Kashiwa, about 30 kilometers northeast of Tokyo, is known for its humble beginnings as a bedroom community for Tokyo workers. The tranquil residential city of almost 500,000 rarely enters the national spotlight, but on a street just 6 minutes from the railroad station, the Bek Miru facility that Motohiro Takamatsu opened in October is turning heads by offering residents a chance to scan their own groceries, garden soil, and other items for radiation, reports the Japan Times. To have Kashiwa become contaminated with radiation, that was a big deal for me, said the software engineer and entrepreneur said. He imported several LB200 gamma spectroscopy machines from Germany to equip his new shop, which allows anyone to check items for contamination from the Fuk crisis for a fee of 980 yen for 20 minutes. No, I don't know how much that is. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission announced this week it has issued safety violations for 5 events this spring and summer at the Pacific Northwest Seoul Commercial Nuclear Reactor located on the Hanford Nuclear Reservation. The incidents included loss of over 4,000 gallons of reactor coolant and water twice in 4 months, and the insertion of reactor control rods when operators believed they were withdrawing the rods. The insertion of rods when operators thought they were withdrawing the rods, you see. Operators chose to proceed with work when it was not approved, said the NRC, when it was outside the bounds of the procedure or when they experienced unexpected plant conditions. In these instances, conservative decision-making was not evident. In a few instances, operators suspected that something was wrong, but didn't speak up, unquote. And Millstone Nuclear Power Station, why do you think they made changes to important safety systems without gaining approval from regulators, according to an audit released this week? So, kind of living up to its name.
That's not funny.
All right. Thank you, Eddie. For the reviews from the Adams are in. Ladies and gentlemen, new, clean, safe, true, cheap to meter, our friend the Adam. This was the year, of course, when the much-awaited literary event occurred, the release of the memoirs of the former Vice President of the United States. This is the Year in Rebuke.
Next, intimate tales of America's former underground Vice President. The action-packed diary of the man who for 8 years was just a heartbeat away from history.
Dick Cheney. Confidential.
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 I've never been a big one for self-promotion. In fact, if they ever gave a Nobel Prize for lack of self-promotion, in all honesty, I'd probably have to nominate myself. So the process of going out in front of the public in order to achieve enhanced sales position for my memoir wasn't all that pleasurable. Oh, there were the secure, undisclosed, expensive hotel rooms with the password-protected porn channels and the nice meals, most of which I couldn't eat, thanks to my old pal, Mr. I Used to Be Your Heart. But basically, it was a thoroughly repetitive process of explaining the painfully obvious to the painfully oblivious. Oh yes, along the way there'd been some friends. Rush Limbaugh went so far as to tell his listeners if they didn't buy my book, they'd no longer be eligible to pay $100 a month for his newsletter. I guess it's fair to say that gentleman doesn't share my distaste for self-promotion. I wouldn't name a newsletter after myself. Heck, I wouldn't allow them to name an Institute for Enhanced Interrogation Studies at a secure, undisclosed college after me. In any case, I was learning to endure the indignities. Face powder, the miking up, involved in book touring. When something cockeyed happened, just as the memoir hit the bestseller list of a newspaper whose bestseller list is the only thing I trust, it all stopped. The powder, the miking, the entire panoply. But as people who crossed me inside the Bush administration could testify, if they dared to publish their memoirs, I'm not easily discouraged. So I invited my book publicist over for an emergency strategy session in the most persuasive way. I sent a secure, undisclosed car to pick her up. Wednesday, 10:48 a.m.
Mr. Vice President?
Just a minute, Phileas. I'm finishing up a call. Go ahead, Sean.
Yeah, just saying, Mr. Vice, I'd love to have you back on the show anytime.
Well,
but in all honesty, I'd be amazed if any of my viewers hadn't bought the book yet. I think you need to reach a little beyond the base, and just my opinion. Gotta go. Show to do. Semper Fi.
That's weird.
His reluctance to have you return?
No, no. Neither of us was in the Marines. Okay, Philia. I saw the schedule for today.
Yes, sir.
A webcast interview with Alan Keyes.
Oh, yes, sir. It has quite a following among...
Among who?
I should imagine among Alan Keyes fans.
Look, sister, maybe you've never done book publicity for someone who operates at my level before.
I did the Jimmy Carter book.
My point exactly. When it comes to getting things done that I think should be done, my policy has always been a little twist on the Clintonian model. Don't ask. Tell. Get me on the Sunday shows. Get me on the late night shows. Get me on Anderson. Goopers. Daytime show. I don't think it's an exaggeration to say that the fate of freedom depends on that book staying at the top of that list for another week.
Oh, all due respect, sir, I should think it might be a wee exaggeration.
I'd like to suggest in the strongest possible terms that you keep your shoulds and your we's out of this particular colloquy.
Yes, Mr. Vice President. Well, there is something we could have you do tonight. You'd be on with Larry King, but...
Well, that's perfect. He's as dim as a gambler's memory and softer than a starlet's neck.
Well, that is quite apt, but...
Listen, my dear, I happen to have information that your dad served as a longtime love spigot for a minister in the Tony Blair government. You wouldn't want that information to subtly show up in the news of the world.
You are correct, I wouldn't, for two reasons.
Just book me on that show and find your own way back to the office. I'm going to need the car. I used to push around people 100 times more powerful than her before breakfast. But of course, these days, there is no breakfast. So I was in the so-called green room, in point of actual fact, it's no greener than the green zone, waiting to be feminized by the makeup fairy. Wednesday, 2:45 p.m. So, Larry, I guess I'm going to be on with you.
Oh, Mr. Vice President.
I'm sorry, I was having a little nap. Yeah. Dreaming that there actually is a better summer fruit than the peach. Weird. Mm. So how's your book doing? I haven't read it yet, but it's definitely on my if I ever read a book list.
Well, thanks, Larry. Have to say it's been a while since I watched your show.
Oh, it's okay, Mr. Vice President. It's been a while since
I mean, to be perfectly candid, given my condition, it was very often an option between watching television and watching my book being written.
Hey, I know the feeling. I've been there. I had more stuff stuck in my chest than Jane Mansfield.
But so I guess Philly had told your producer what I'd really like to perhaps downplay just a shade is the notion that there's some kind of rift between myself and President Bush. I mean, yes, it's true we haven't talked since I sent him the book.
No, I understand. I bet he's embarrassed that he hasn't gotten through it yet. You know, could happen to anybody.
Yeah.
But
okay, gentlemen. Hi, I'm Jason, the PA on the show. Hey. Joy is delighted that you're both joining us. The third person on the panel is Felicity Danger. She's kind of a wacky blogger. She'll be the liberal on the panel, and I hope you got the topics we're going to cover: the space junk falling down, the stock market gyrations, and which was worse, the Emmys or the Republican debate. Anybody need water?
Joy?
Bea, we're on her show. I don't do a show anymore. Haven't for a year. What can you do? They're nuts over here.
Panel?
Yes, you're representing the right, and Larry here, of course,
is representing the Jews.
Excuse me, gentlemen. I just forgot something.
Oh, is that anything we can help you with?
As a matter of fact, it is. You can fire my publicist. One of these days, maybe when I get a few thousand more heartbeats installed, I'll listen all the way through to a sentence that begins with the word, but. And a partial diary for mid-September 2011. Sincerely yours, Dick Cheney. Confidential.
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 This is Le Show, the Year in Rebuke, and on the subject of those scanners at the airport, you know my philosophy. I'm like Newt. I have mottos in my head, which I call philosophies. The one on this subject is, a pat-down is for now, radiation is forever. In that regard, there's this. Airport body scanners like those used in Fort Lauderdale and Orlando, this is according to the Orlando Sun-Sentinel, may pose a significant cancer threat, particularly to those over age 65 and women genetically at risk of breast cancer, according to some medical experts, because the scanner's dose of radiation penetrates just below skin level, doesn't go deeper than that. It could imperil the lens of the eye, the thyroid, and a woman's breasts, said Dr. Edward Dower, head of radiology at Florida Medical Center. I think it's potentially a real danger to the public, he said, noting even a small dose could be risky for people predisposed to cancer. This is an additional exposure. The scanners in question use backscatter X-ray technology to create an image. The problem, Dower says, is the machines emit ionizing radiation. Ionizing means it knocks the electrons out of your body, which breaks your DNA chain, which can cause death or cancer. It's a little extreme, what he's saying there, isn't it? To have ionizers in the room. The agency also uses more than 540 millimeter wave scanners. You're aware of those. Canada uses those. They're considered a safer option because they don't rely on radiation, even though the German government has found that they're no more effective than the backscatter ones. A PBS ProPublica investigation found the backscatter scanners can cause 6 to 100 cancer cases per year among U.S. passengers. European authorities prohibited their use at all European airports. This prompted a renewed wave of concern here in this country. Why would you buy a machine that emits radiation if you could buy one that didn't? Asks Broward County Mayor John Rodstrom, a frequent flyer who makes it a point to avoid the scanners. You and me, Mayor. At his urging, the Broward County Commission asked the TSA to consider removing backscatter scanners from the Fort Lauderdale Airport, unless the agency can prove they're safe. Comparing the scanner's radiation to that received during an airline flight, is misleading, according to a group of scientists from UC San Francisco. They said the cosmic radiation that infiltrates airliners is absorbed by the whole body, thus less dangerous than the low-level radiation of the scanners, which permeates only the skin and underlying tissues. In addition to Dower's concerns, they said blood and male testicles could be endangered. Have I got your attention yet? Radiation is forever, ladies and gentlemen. Just like diamonds. All right, then. And finally, on the year in rebuke, the we didn't have time to go into the adventures of Rupert and James Murdoch this year, but, you know, something tells me we're going to get back to that very soon in the year to come. At least I certainly hope so. But the President of the United States, in late August, early September, unveiled, after the debacle regarding the decision whether to raise the debt ceiling, roiled the Congress and Capitol Hill and the White House for much of the summer. The president decided to go on the campaign trail and to do so brandishing a new slogan. That was at least initially connected with his jobs bill and with a couple other pieces of legislation that he wanted to pass, although he then decided much of what was embodied in those pieces of legislation he would try to put into effect via the method of executive orders, which did not require the consent of the Republican-controlled Congress. The slogan that was the rubric under which all this transpired, and which I believe is still the slogan for the White House as the year turns, is "We can't wait."
We can't wait. Although we waited before. Now the time is late. We can't wait anymore. We waited for Congress. We waited for Iraq. We waited for Europe. They waited right back. We waited for McConnell. We waited for Boehner. We got all twisted up in a triple half gainer. We waited for the banks to get back in shape. Kind of like waiting for a raisin to turn back into a grape. We waited for the polls to tell us just where the center might be so we could get over there. We waited for the Afghans to take advantage of the surge. They waited for us to prolong the splurge. We waited for the leftists to get off our backs. We waited for the right to moderate their attacks. And while we waited, the economy got worse. It needed a doctor. We waited for the nurse. We waited for recovery. And we twirled a few knots. Outside the Beltway, folks waited for jobs. We waited for China. We waited for Japan. We waited for the echo
Yes, we can. Yes, we can. We waited for the markets and their wizardly spell. But they didn't weave that old magic so well. We waited for stimulus. That was too damn slow. We waited for Lefty. We waited for Godot. We waited for everyone. If we weren't in D.C., we would even have waited for the Robert E. Lee. We waited for the Senate. We waited for the House. We waited for the Fed. Like a cat waiting for a mouse. But we can't wait. Although we waited before. Election's getting close. We can't wait anymore.
The Year in Rebuke, ladies and gentlemen. An exclusive feature of not even copyrighted. We didn't even bother with that. And just before we go, Rupert Murdoch's News International is thought to have prepared a legal fund of about $155 million to settle civil lawsuits brought by victims of the News of the World phone hacking scandal ahead of a high court showdown in the new year.
Yeah, I think we can stand that embarrassment.
I think you can. News is understood to have earmarked the money to settle several high-profile cases, with some claimants likely to receive well above $1.5 million. Nice Corp appears to keen to settle as many cases as possible before mid-February, when the High Court begins to hear a group of test cases, including actor Jude Law. The High Court trials hold the potential to reveal more details of wrongdoing by News of the World and deliver further damaging publicity about the invasiveness of hacking and the distress of victims. We wouldn't want that. That's how nice they really are. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this. Oh, and Rupert is on Twitter. That is nice. That's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations on NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, on the mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want at harryshearer.com and kcrw.com, available for your smartphone through stitcher.com, and available as a free podcast through kcrw.com. And it'd be just like Nice Corp sending aside even more money if you'd agree to, for that purpose, if you'd agree to join with me then. But you already, thank you very much. Tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, and Hawaii desks. Thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead, and thanks to Butters, Adrian Bottom, here at Global Radio, for help with today's broadcast. This broadcast is on Twitter. Join the more than 52,000 followers at The Harry Shearer, won't you? The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. So long from London. Somebody turn the lights on.